40 years ago this week, Newark, New Jersey erupted into violence.
There will be a curfew upon pedestrians starting at 11 o'clock.
The rioting continued for days. By the end of the 1960s, half of Newark's population had moved out of the city, and the city has never fully recovered. Nonetheless, Newark is marking the anniversary of the riots with public events and exhibitions. NPR's Nancy Solomon reports.
The turning point for this city came on the hot summer night of July 12, 1967. A black cab driver named John Smith was pulled over and badly beaten by police within sight of the residence of a large public housing project. He was dragged into the 4th Precinct Station House, and an angry crowd quickly gathered outside.
By the time I got there, there were probably close to a couple hundred people, you know, milling around, screaming, yelling.
Newark resident Bob Kervin, himself African-American, was a civil rights organizer at the time. He stood on a car to address the crowd, urging them to march downtown to protest frequent brutality by the mostly white police force. But the crowd had lost patience with peaceful protests.
There was a rain of stones, rocks, Molotov cocktails at the precinct. The flames started flickering, flowing down the side of the building, and the police came charging out with nightsticks, shields, and riot gear and into the crowd, and I fled.
5 days of rioting ensued. Stores were looted and some burned down. After a policeman was killed, the governor sent in the National Guard with orders to use their weapons at will.
Sporadic gunfire has broken out immediately across the street from the hospital. I'm now following three Newark City policemen into the area where the shooting occurred.
Reporters Ronnie Watkins and Bob Ortiz from the Pacifica Radio Archives.
The whole scene is incomprehensible, absurd.
They had tanks and armored vehicles blocking every road so you couldn't get into Newark.
Craig Wilson grew up in the Jewish section of Newark and worked at his father's shop, Moe's Dry Goods, that was just blocks from the 4th Precinct. It was part of a row of small stores, mostly owned by ethnic white merchants in Newark's black neighborhood. When the riot ended, Wilson returned to the street.
All the windows were shattered. The stores were, some were burnt out. Everything was stolen. I mean, the stores were all empty shelves, most of them. It was just devastation.
Inexplicably, his father's store was the only one on the block left untouched. The residents of the neighborhood, called the Central Ward, were devastated, too. Official figures reported 26 deaths, 725 injuries, and some 1,500 arrests. A governor's commission found that most of the deaths were caused by police or National Guard shotguns. But the causes of the riot go far deeper than one act of police brutality.
My first assignment was at a parish that was an African-American parish right in the middle of the Central Ward, surrounded by three high-rise complexes of public housing. And we had another 25,000 in substandard buildings.
William Linder, a white Catholic priest, came to Newark in 1963 at a time when the city was undergoing major changes. After World War II, white ethnic Newarkers began to move to the suburbs in huge numbers, spurred on by new interstate highways, low-interest mortgages, and widespread access to college provided by the GI Bill. As blacks moved into the Central Ward, they faced severe job and housing discrimination.
There was no local home ownership at all. I would say almost zero. The school teachers were white. All the principals were white. The social workers were white. And in fact, even the rackets were controlled outside of our community.
City Hall and the police department are now mostly black-run institutions, but they struggle for the resources to do a good job. Linda started and still runs a nonprofit organization that built housing and social service centers and even brought the first supermarket to the neighborhood in 25 years. And while home ownership rates are still low, there are owner-occupied homes in the Central Ward, some of them built by Linder's group.
This community now looks fundamentally different than it did 30-some-odd years ago. It was a walled-in neighborhood.
Clement Price is a historian at Rutgers University in Newark.
We're at the 4th Precinct, which is ground zero for the events of the summer of 1967.
Price is standing where Newark's past meets its present, directly across the street from the police station, where public housing towers once stood are new townhouses that offer home ownership to low-income families.
Everybody has a front yard. Every dwelling has an address. I'm looking across the street at number 9. I mean, that's like an American narrative, to have an address. So this is a community which has changed, and the 4th Precinct now reminds us of a Newark which I believe is a part of the past and not a part of the future.
Price does want the past remembered, however, and thinks the 4th Precinct should be preserved as a landmark. His colleague, Rutgers sociologist Max Herman, is working on a book about the riots. For most of the past 40 years, Herman says, Newark has tried to ignore its history in favor of a message of renaissance.
Those raw emotions exist nonetheless, and it also holds the city back because there hasn't been an airing of an honest airing and of what's happened in the past. You can't have a renaissance without reconciliation. You can't have reconciliation without truth-telling.
For the first time, many of the city's institutions are commemorating the riots. Herman is working on an exhibition coming to the New Jersey Historical Society, and another will be held at a contemporary arts center. The photos, video footage, and oral histories will allow Newarkers to relive the riots. And this time, through the wide-angle lens that 40 years can give, it just might provide the kind of truth-telling Herman says the city needs. For NPR News, I'm Nancy Solomon.
And you can watch a slideshow history of the Newark riots on our website, npr.org.